Blog Talk Radio.
I tell you,
there's a lady in the man's bathroom. Look at that. There is a woman in the man's gun right here in Baltimore.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Pro Wrestling Flashback. I am Sinbad, and of course, I am joined by Cotrera. How are you doing, Cotrera?
I love Dusty Rhodes.
I do too.
He's on NXT tonight.
Is he really?
Yeah, because you know Goldust is getting married. I guess he's going to be his best man.
Aw, that's awesome. That's awesome.
And he paid like Ted DiBiase Sr. He paid like Ted DiBiase Sr. to be the minister.
That is so great. we had last week. Well, hey, what did you do for Halloween? Just real fast.
Oh, nothing. It was a sunny night. I went up to my sister's, and she's got three kids, so we went trick or treating with them.
Oh, that's awesome. That's fun. Yeah. You know, yeah. I wish I was able to go trick or treating. I dressed up like Iron Sheik, which was great. And I don't know if you saw pictures of them, but like I actually proposed this weekend, and I actually proposed in my Iron Sheik clothes. So there's some photographs, and they are pretty great. So it was overall a great weekend. Of course.
Said yes.
Yes, she did. Yes, she did.
Okay. Well, you probably wouldn't have brought it up if she didn't. So.
Yeah, I know.
How many houses did you get? If you're doing Iron Sheik, you probably could only get to like four houses, huh?
Yeah, just moseying along. That's awesome. All right, so when we last left off, there was a new addition to WCW, a new heel faction that actually changed wrestling completely because there was nothing like this. What had happened was the last night that we left off was Bash at the Beach in 96, and Hulk Hogan turned heel for the first time, I mean, since he was a mainstream star.
Yeah, I mean, since...
Huge deal.
Since, gosh, when he was back in, like, the WWF, I think, or something like that, you know, like in the very early 80s, when he was managed by Fred Blassie.
Yes, he was. It was crazy. It was crazy. I remember watching this like as a kid, and like I watched with my buddy Jerry, and we were both, you know, wrestling nerds. You know, we're like, you know, 13, 14 years old, whatever. And it was such a big deal. It was such a huge deal at the time. I remember thinking like, oh my gosh, like what this leads into is the Nitro the next night, and like they did like a series of interviews. The next night on the Nitro.
Everybody talked about it.
Every single person talked about it. It's like, I mean, cause it was like, they never really did that. It was like the hottest piece of news, you know, like, you know, from everyone from Arn Anderson to Kevin Sullivan, I mean, to everybody, they all talked about it. And it was,
that's why I got over so much. That's what really, that helped it get over a lot.
It did. And Kevin Sullivan actually, go ahead.
I was just going to say, and I think that, you know, this thing, I think this is what really started the 90s boom period.
Oh, and, yes.
I don't think it would have started without this. So.
No, I 100% agree with you. So Kevin Sullivan has an interview, and he says that Hulk Hogan, because as you guys know, Kevin Sullivan has been trying to end Hulkamania forever. So this was kind of pretty much the end of that feud, essentially, because, not necessarily the end of it, but Kevin Sullivan just said, like, Hulk Hogan ended Hulkamania at his own hands. So he's, like, by him saying that, Hulk Hogan is now more evil than Kevin Sullivan is himself.
Yeah.
So
and
Go ahead.
I was going to say, he said, I didn't have to kill Hulkamania, he did it himself. And,
yeah.
You know, there was like Halloween Havoc in 94 when that feud started, right?
Yes, it was.
With Sullivan, and this was like almost 2 years later.
And they knew they had a hot commodity on their hands. for this Nitro. You know, it was the biggest thing in wrestling. Everybody cared about it. So what they did, they started the show off with some stills of, like, the show, like, and, you know, from the night before, of, like, what happened. So they're all talking about it. And what do they do immediately? They start off with a great match because they know that people are going to watch, like, and they want to know what's going on. So while they're all there tuning in, they give Rey Mysterio versus Dean Malenko for the Cruiserweight title, which they had already had a match the pay-per-view the month before. But this was on Nitro as the opener, and it was a hell of a match. Tell us a little bit about it.
Just what you said. I mean, I think this was better than the matches they had before. It's probably better than the one in Baltimore and the one the next night. And Ray won it in about 12 minutes and 30 seconds by reversing a tilt-a-whirl backbreaker into a Hurricanrana. And then he did I think Benny did a promo about Hulk Hogan.
Yes, and the thing that I was very impressed with was Rey Mysterio had like a hard-hitting, like the best match of the night before.
Yeah.
And he came in and he tore it up again with Dean Malenko, who has that, like, you know, like the stiffer style as well, to where it was just, you know, it'd be hard not to be impressed with Rey Mysterio at this time. And he was just, you know, he was so little at the time, and I don't know, I was a huge fan of his. Then we had Lord Regal and Squire Dave Taylor. They beat Big Bubba Hugh Morris. And it was because, Big Bubba's still in the Dungeon of Doom at the time. And John Tenta comes out, and they're still going on with that feud where, and this is also like a strange heel versus heel match, but they're still going on with that feud with John Tenta and Big Bubba, which was still, you know, very, you know, I don't know, it was a good mid-card thing, but it didn't go much longer past this.
Yeah, I think this was pretty much it, unless they did something like on Saturday night or something like that.
Yes. Eddie Guerrero beat Psychosis. Another hell of a match. They had another, like, a really good match. This was during that, like, that weird Eddie Guerrero kind of mid-card push that they're doing right now. And
yeah.
Psychosis had just, you know, come back after, you know, he wrestled Conan back in, what, January or something like that, or it had been a while, and then he came back to face Rey Mysterio the night before, and now he goes against Eddie Guerrero, and I was actually pretty shocked that Psychosis lost this match because, you know, he had such a great showing the night before, but, you know, it took me a while to realize that Psychosis was just going to be an enhancement guy for the most part.
I think it was like a year before I actually saw Psychosis win a match on TV.
Yes. He did a job for
in 96 to Billy Kidman on Worldwide.
Oh, yeah.
When Kidman was, he was still just a jobber.
Yeah, he was just a jobber at the time. Yeah, I really liked Billy Kidman back around this time, you know, the next couple of years. The Steiner Brothers beat the Nasty Boys. And the winner was going to get a tag team title shot at Hog Wild. And Hog Wild was the next show that they were building up. And it's funny because Hog Wild was only called Hog Wild for 1 year because they actually got sued. Who sued them? Was it Harley Davidson?
Maybe it was. I think there was something else called Hog Wild, and I can't really remember. And they came up with the Brilliant Road Wild name.
Yes. And after the match, they had this strange thing. This was a strange interview. Mean Gene interviewed the Nasty Boys, and the Nasties kind of teased that they were going to go with the NWO in a way, because the NWO did things kind of like the Nasty Boys did. They did their own thing. So they had this little while where they're teasing that they were going to be aligned with the NWO. And I thought it was strange at the time, but like I was like, oh, well, you know, I guess they're going to be with Hogan. But, you know, it was just another little thing to try getting it over more.
Yeah.
All right. Ric Flair comes out, the new U.S. champion Ric Flair, and wrestles Jim Powers, legendary jobber Jim Powers, and beats him in about 5 minutes. And there was like a they finally cleared up the Eric Bischoff thing, where Bischoff said he was like in a like a last minute meeting, and so that's why he had disappeared and he couldn't come out for the main event, which
during
once
the
again,
most important pay per view they've ever had.
Yes, and it was just very, very strange stuff. And then they did an interview with the Horsemen, and the Horsemen, like, they all, like, really, they kind of said that, you know, they haven't always done the, you know, the nicest things or something like that, but they were still shocked that Hogan had joined the NWO and turned on all of his fans and stuff, and it was so great that, like, you know, everybody had the same point of view, you know, it was awesome.
Like in 87, when Hulk Hogan fought Andre, every week they would get comments from the superstars on who would win the match.
Yes.
So, you know, that didn't normally happen. And you'd have baby faces thinking, well, Andre's just so big, Hogan can't beat him, and stuff like that. This is what it reminded me of with all these guys talking about the Hogan heel turn.
It's so crazy. Like, this whole thing was just so crazy. Oh. Arn Anderson was beat by Sting. Sting beat him with the Scorpion Deathlock after Arn Anderson was going to hit him with a DDT, and then Sting held out of the ropes. So Arn Anderson just fell down, and then, you know, he just got up with the Scorpion Deathlock. And then was it closed out with an NWO interview?
Yeah, I think it was they were in the parking lot. Because you know this was at MGM Studios, you know, where they tape Worldwide and stuff like that. And I believe they were here like every week before Hog Wild. I think they taped every Nitro or had every live Nitro here that entire month. And, yeah, they were out in the parking lot like next to Limousine, and Gene Oakland interviewed them. And then they showed like stills of the Hogan thing, which I thought was brilliant because you never really saw – skills in WCW, but I mean, if you don't show like any footage, you know, it's something people are going to buy the replay of the thing, you know, just
yes,
to see what happened. So,
yes,
smart.
They would. It was very smart, actually. And I mean, I loved how just how they did this, how they did all of this. So why did they, you know, do all these shows at MGM this month?
I don't know. I think because just that we were in Florida, and you know, from the night before, and
yeah, but I mean, the whole month they did this.
Yeah, I have no idea. Maybe they were doing a bunch of. I don't know if they were doing any big like those marathon worldwide tapings or anything like that. I think I see one down here. I don't know. Maybe they just wanted to. I don't know. Maybe just wanted to. Cut some costs or something, you know, and just spend the whole month there.
Yeah. I mean, maybe that's what they were doing. But, I mean, it was kind of odd because this is such a hot angle, and they're, you know, they're doing it in front of a couple hundred people. It was just, I don't know. All right, so they had the next week, it was the Steiners wrestled Norton Ice Train, and this was during a thing where Teddy Long was trying to manage Ice Train and Scott Norton, kind of. And Scott Norton was having none of it. Do you remember this? And this is kind of what led to – this is almost like a reverse Colonel Robert Parker to where, you know, they like Norton didn't want the manager, and Ice Train did. So it ended up leading to the breakup between you know, Scott Norton and Ice Train. Dean Malenko wrestled Billy Kidman, and Billy Kidman was just a jobber at the time. He was still wrestling on those East Coast independent shows at this time as well. So it was just,
yeah.
I don't know, it was just really cool. And I remember seeing him debut in this, and, you know, he changed a lot in a year as a wrestler. It seemed like he grew up, like, facially and everything, in a year or a year and a half. I mean, it was amazing how quick it happened.
Yeah, he really started to break out during the Raven thing the next year.
Yes, and they announced that at Hog Wild, it was going to be Dean Malenko versus Chris Benoit.
Yeah.
Harlem Heat, they wrestled Dick Slater and Mike Enos, who Dirty Dick, he had teamed with Buckhouse Buck, and I think Buck was gone by this time, right?
Yeah, do you remember the name of this tag team?
I do not remember the name of the tag team.
Rough and Ready.
Oh, yeah, I remember. That's awesome. Rough and Ready. Awesome. Awesome name for a tag team or a gay porno. They work both. All right. And this is funny. This match is funny because Sister Sherry kissed Dick Slater for some reason. And Robert Parker, like, was the manager of both teams. So it was just like one. They were still kind of doing this little love quarrel between Rob Parker and Sherry, and I don't know. Medusa was finally wrestling. She wrestled Malaya Hosaka, who they would do that every once in a while. They would bring in a Japanese girl, like, for a week or so, and have Medusa wrestle her on all the house shows and also on the show, just because they didn't have any other women to wrestle. There was
yeah.
no one else, you know, there was no one else for her to wrestle. They just wanted to pay her, and so she'd throw that belt in the trash.
Yeah,
Arn Anderson.
Well, I was going to say, they announced that Medusa faced Bull Nakano at Hog Wild, and the winner gets to destroy the other one's motorcycle.
Yes, yes. Wasteful spending at its best, because no one gave a shit whose motorcycle was going to get destroyed. But, you know, it was just something
I think
Bull
Nakano had a motorcycle, and it had a sidecar for Sonny Ono. I can't remember.
Yes, yes. That was awesome. That was funny. Then, we have a call, so let's go ahead and take that real fast.
All right.
Area code 727.
Hey, guys, how you doing?
Hey, what's going on?
Hey, I really enjoyed the show. I've been listening to you guys actually for the last month, and you're bringing back some great memories, man. I'm really glad you guys are able to recap some of the, these are some of the best years of WCW.
Well, thank you.
Oh, I appreciate it. What's your name?
My name's Rich. I'm in Tampa, Florida.
Oh, awesome, awesome. So you listened to our show for a while?
Yeah, I've been listening to it for a month. I was just listening to it right now. I just wanted to chime in real quick because you guys were wondering why they filmed that whole month at MGM Studios.
Yes.
The reason why, the Olympics was actually going on during this time in Atlanta, because that's where WCW was based out of, so they moved their headquarters during this time to Orlando.
Oh, okay.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I was actually living in Orlando, and it was great for me. I've been a wrestling fan for years, but I used to work out at this gym in Kissimmee, which is, you know, over near Disney World, and and I used to see Steven Regal and Benoit and all the guys. They were Kevin Sullivan, and I was like a kid in a candy store. I was hanging out with Public Enemy. Well, I used to go to this club. It was like what's it called? Like a Mako's, really cool Baja club. And I remember, like, within 3 feet of Flair and the Horseman and Terry Taylor and all these guys. It was just, it was really a cool time back then.
You said you were at a gym?
Yeah, I used to work out at this gym called Powerhouse Gym. It was in Kissimmee, and those guys were in there like every day for a month. I would see them in the morning working out. There was probably like 30 of them in there.
Okay, I get most of the guys, but Kevin Sullivan was there every day working out.
Yeah, I would see Kevin Sullivan. He would always be usually working out with Arn Anderson. And this, you could tell something was going on with Kevin Sullivan. I remember talking to him briefly for a couple of times, but I think this was right around the time when he was having problems with woman, when she was seeing Chris Benoit, because I remember he'd be at the gym, but he was never working out. He was always on his cell phone.
That's awesome. That is awesome.
Yeah,
thank you for the call, man. It's very informative.
Yeah, I just wanted to add that because, like I said, I live in Tampa. I see these guys all the time now, but this was a time for me. You know, I remember seeing them all the time just out and about for that whole month, and that's pretty much why they were there, was because the Olympics was in Atlanta.
All right, man. I really appreciate that. Thank you for the little news bit.
Yeah, keep up the great show, guys. I'll keep lifting. I appreciate it.
All right. Take care, man.
All right. Bye.
All right. Yeah. That was a nice call. All right. And then we had Ming beat Arn Anderson in which I thought was a huge win. It was a huge, huge win because Ming was kind of treated almost like a jobber for a while, you know?
Yeah, he was basically just like a tag team guy, basically.
And this was actually used, I believe, to get over the tag team of the Faces of Fear, Barbarian and Ming. But
yeah.
It was crazy because Arn Anderson and Benoit had wrestled the Giant and Kevin Sullivan in kind of like a marquee match, and now Arn Anderson is now losing to lower members of the Dungeon. It was just weird, but you know, whatever. Guerrero beats Benoit via countout because Dean Malenko ran out and he rammed Chris Benoit's head into the ring post, and
you know what, Dean Malenko was the thing with Benoit and Malenko had gotten Jimmy Hart was paying him to take out Chris Benoit, and Jimmy Hart was going to get him another Cruiserweight title shot. So they had that little deal going.
Yeah, it was just this little storyline that I thought was pretty cool. I liked it a lot.
Yeah.
How they were doing that. And Hall and Nash were actually in the arena, and they were watching things over, you know, during this match was. It was weird. I don't want to use the word weird. It was just interesting, I guess, because
didn't they have a sheet with NWO written on it, over the
yes.
MGM logo or WCW logo or something?
Yes, a sheet with this, you know, multi-million-dollar company, and they had the sheet written all over. This is what was great right here was. It was Lex Luger versus Big Bubba, and Luger was on the show the week before because he had suffered that supposed concussion or whatever when he got Stinger splashed. And Nash and Hall come out with Hogan, and they just beat the hell out of him. And the one thing that I remember is Big Bubba was trying to help them. He wanted to join them. He wanted to be with them. So he was, acting like, hey, I'll join you guys. And they beat the crap out of Bubba, and they threw him on the ground, too. So then they did an interview with Hogan and Paul Nash mid-ring, and that ended the show, and said that Hogan won the title shot, of course, against the Giant at Hog Wild. He's going to get his belt back.
And he knew when it was announced that he was going to win.
Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was. That's just he challenged everybody, and it was awesome because, I got so excited for the end of the show because he's like, I'll fight any of you guys. So the show actually ends with faces and heels all coming out wanting to fight them, including the Steiners. Ming and Barbarian were out there. Arn Anderson was out there. And they're all, babyface, heel, all of them working together because they want to go after the NWO. And the show ended like that. And you're like, oh, my God, what is going to happen next?
Yeah.
Awesome.
And this is when you're expecting – they're building up everybody else in the company. They want to kick these guys' ass. And
yes, they do.
So then you kind of start expecting some teamwork with everybody, but it never really materializes, never really goes anywhere, which we'll find out in the coming weeks. So
yes, it was the next Nitro was they had this is a strange one. It opened
let me say this. I was looking at this New Japan Pro Wrestling results from July 17th, and there's two matches on the show. It actually looks pretty cool. Randy Savage pins Jushin Liger in about 8 minutes.
I've seen the match before. It was on YouTube.
Oh, have you?
Yes, it's on. Someone posted it on the message board once, the F4W board.
Oh, I never even knew these two wrestled each other.
Yes, they did.
And they had a Sting and the Great Muta beat the Road Warriors. I think I've seen that match.
I don't remember seeing that match, but I'm certain that I've seen Randy Savage versus Jushin Liger before.
Okay, why did
you wasn't. It wasn't the best match. It wasn't the best match.
Oh, it wasn't. It sounds kind of like a clash of styles.
Yeah, but I mean, it was interesting because Macho Man was great, you know?
Yeah.
Macho Man was just, he was awesome. I loved Macho Man. All right. They had Nitro, and they didn't seem to put a lot in this Nitro. It was Dave Taylor beat Scott Norton, and like it was by disqualification. They had a Conan beat VK Wall Street, a nothing match, and then there was the Jim Powers, Joe Gomez, Renegade, and Alex Wright, pretty much all jobbers. They beat Kevin Sullivan, the Leprechaun, who had joined the Dungeons of Doom on a Saturday night, I believe the week before, 2 weeks before.
Was that Buddy Lee Parker?
I'm not sure who it was.
I want to say it was Buddy Lee Parker.
It might have been, but horrible, horrible.
I just remember the little guy running around the ring.
Yeah, it was just, you know, they beat him by DQ because the giant comes in and just beeps the hell out of all of them. And then he accepted Hogan's challenge for Hog Wild. And this was when Kevin Nash and Scott Hall, like, invaded the whole control room thing. Do you remember
the production truck? Yeah, the production truck.
Yes, yes. And it, like, the... I think it was the yeah, no, that's the next week. DDP beats Prince Iaukea. D. Malenko beats Chavo. Ming beats Ice Train because of Scott Norton interfering. Eddie Guerrero beats Psychosis. Once again, Psychosis jabbed out. And then Sting, Randy Savage, and Luger stay a team for this match to beat Mongo, McMichael, Arn Anderson, and Benoit. So this was kind of a nothing Nitro.
Yeah, it was just a it just seems like a lame duck show kind of.
It kind of was. they showed this the next Nitro though. They showed this like attack from like I think it was a house show where Sting and Luger were together, and then Luger all of a sudden gets a phone call, so he has to leave. So then Hall and Nash like beat the shit out of Sting in a parking lot.
I think they threw him in the trunk of the car, didn't they?
Yes, they did. It was something like that, yes. And so that I mean that's pretty much, you know, the little thing that they showed. Another strange beginning. They had Hacksaw Jim Duggan beat Mean Mike Enos in a taped fit with a taped fist of, you know, wrapping it around twice.
This promo I have to talk about this.
Go ahead.
He's talking about Hulk Hogan. He says, Terry, I know you're a great technical wrestler, but when we meet, I'm not coming to wrestle, I'm coming to fight. He said, a great technical wrestler, that Hulk Hogan. That's like when Gorilla Monsoon said Carlos Colon was like this fiery youngster in the 93 Royal Rumble when he was like 55 years old. Jesus Christ.
Yes. Yes. All right, this Nitro, though.
This was a great show.
It was a great show. All right. Here's what happened.
Mainly just for one reason, which you're fixing to talk about.
All right, Sting, Randy Savage, and Lex Luger are wrestling Ric Flair, Benoit, and Steve McMichael, okay? And you'll explain it better. Just go ahead.
Okay, so they're having basically the same match they had the week before in the main event. All of a sudden, Jimmy Hart runs out to ringside, and he's just yelling at everybody in the ring. Says he's just pointing towards the back, and everybody he says the NWO is in the back. And all of a sudden, you the camera goes backstage. You see Arn Anderson down. You see Marcus Bagwell down, and Hall and Nash are there.
Just to rewind just a second, no one believed Jimmy Hart at first, you know? No one would listen to him. Like, Sting was waving him away, like, get the hell out of here. But then Luger, who was managed by Jimmy Hart, like, was finally like, hang on, let's listen to him, you know? And so then they listened to him, And then all of a sudden, like all of them all at once, like go to the back. Sorry for interrupting you. But go ahead.
Oh, that's okay. And then Scotty Reese comes out of a trailer, gets nailed in the head with a garbage can. And Rey Mysterio comes out of a trailer and climbs like on the on the side of the stairs and dives on Kevin Nash. And this is probably one of the spots that everybody remembers from this era. And he spears him like right into the side of this trailer. And I mean, he speared him. That fucker went high in the air, and he's lucky he didn't get hurt on that fall down. He was so high in the air. And then the Horsemen and the Savage and Luger and Sting come out, and they get in the limousine, and Savage jumps on top of the limousine. So this limousine is peeling out of this parking lot with this Madman Randy Savage right on the roof, reaching down through the,
They drag him in. They drag him in. They drag Macho Man Randy Savage into the limo with them.
Yeah.
Macho Man is now traveling with NWO somewhere.
And we never see him again.
Yes. You hear nothing about this, what happened with Macho Man. I don't know if they went out for drinks. I don't know what happened with that exactly. But you don't really ever find out. When Rey Mysterio was thrown, I believe it was Bobby Heenan was like, he threw him like a lawn dart. Because he threw him just, head first. It was awesome, though.
Remember when they did the same thing in TNA when they came in, they did the same thing to Red?
Yes, they did.
It was not as good as this.
Yes,
and then the whole show just stops.
Yeah, the whole show just stops. People are out there crying. There's actually fans in the Orlando area that are calling the police. People think this is real. They're calling the cops. Rey Mysterio, because he got attacked, they took off his mask and he's covering his face with his hands because they're putting him in the ambulance.
Then he's saying there were four guys. Remember? He was saying
Quattro. Yes. There's four guys because perfect English-speaking Rey Mysterio at this time did not know a word of English. So, because he's a Mexican, And this is racist WCW. And then they put Arn Anderson and Mark Bagwell in the same ambulance. Yes,
and Ric Flair and Sting get in the
Arn
ambulance.
Anderson.
Yeah.
Yes, and Sting for some reason is going with Marcus Bagwell. So they're all four of the same.
Well, you remember back to the
time.
Early 90s, Sting was one of the guys that trained him. In storyline, at least.
Yes, but I mean, this hadn't been mentioned in 5 years, if not more.
Yeah, I know. I just remember Deborah, she was back there crying, and, Elizabeth's crying, woman's crying. You got, all these, the Steiners are back there. This whole thing has just stopped, and nobody knows what to do. And, I mean, this must have taken, a half an hour or something like that?
Well, they even had, one throwaway match in the middle of it, of the Steiners against High Voltage, and they would, still cut back and forth to, backstage,
And I just remember the Steiners coming to the ring, and Rick Steiner, he's just shaking his head, and he keeps looking backwards, back to the dressing room, and
Scott's trying to get him. Yeah, make sure he
wasn't about to get a catch. Yeah, and Scott Steiner's trying to get him, focused on the match. And I know they were supposed to have Eddie Guerrero and Rey Mysterio on this show, which kind of pissed me off. But what can you do?
Well, hey, who needs Rey Mysterio when you can have the substitute of Big Bubba? Eddie Guerrero beat Big Bubba with a sunset flip. Which, how that's even possible that he could hold that man down, who's almost literally twice his size, with a sunset flip, but he did. And then Bischoff on commentary says that WCW has been contacted by a national news agency about the backstage incident. And, they're obviously hinting at CNN, which Ted Turner also owns, which is funny and interesting. And they were supposed to have the Giant versus Arn Anderson, but Arn Anderson's injured, of course. So his substitute was for the main event of Nitro on July 29th, 1996. The main eventer was Greg the Hammer Valentine against the Giant. And the Giant, of course, destroyed him in a couple of minutes. Not even, a minute and a half.
Now, how old were you when this was going on in 1996?
I was 13 years old.
So I'm guessing you were still in, junior high?
Seventh grade. Yeah, I was in seventh grade, I think.
Now, what was the reaction like in school at this time? Was this a big deal? I mean, the whole NWA thing?
Yeah, this is great that you're bringing this up. Yeah, it was, because I had my circle of wrestling friends already, okay? There was a circle of wrestling fans that were already there that already liked wrestling, okay? And then as the storyline was going, and actually it was like probably about 97 where like some other people that like, you know, I would you know at school, but, you know, that like never talked to me about wrestling before would bring up wrestling to me like, hey, you know, did you see, you know, what happened with the NWO? And then like once I got into high school, there'd be, you know, people on teams that would, like, you know, like, someone on the football team would be wearing an NWO shirt or an Austin 316 shirt because it wasn't nerdy anymore. It wasn't like a dirty secret. So then by the time I was, like, in 10th grade or something, like probably, what was that, 98, 99, I mean, wrestling was really, really popular. And, I mean, like, I probably had 10 wrestling shirts and, you know, mixed in with my lame punk rock t-shirts that I would wear at the time. But like, yeah, I would, you know, wear all these shirts and they were fine. You know, you could still get laid by a girl while wearing an NWO shirt because it was like acceptable at the time. No, I'm serious. It's the truth.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, I know what you're talking about.
You know, it was acceptable. Like if you're wearing an NWO shirt now, like, you know, lucky enough, I don't have an NWO shirt, but if I did, I, you know, hopefully would still get laid. But, like, I'm saying, like, you know, the average nerdy high school kid wearing wrestling shirts is probably not going to, you know, be looked at in the same light someone in the 90s were, because it was more mainstream accepted than it was, or than it is now. So, yeah, it was, but the reaction to this, to get back, I guess, was, it was pretty huge. It was pretty, pretty huge. I remember this was a couple of years later, obviously, like 3 years later, but and we'll get to it when we get to it, but I'll never forget the night after Owen Hart died.
Uh-huh.
Like, I'm telling you, man, people at my school were like, they were sad, and, you know, everybody was talking about it. Like, I was talking about it with teachers because they knew I loved wrestling, you know, and, like, you know, people were knowing about it, like, you know, asking a bunch of questions, like, hey, what really happened and all that stuff. Because, you know, like, that first day, like, people were saying, like, oh, did someone throw him off? Or, you know what I mean? Just stupid.
Did he commit suicide?
Yeah, was it a suicide? Like, all that type of stuff. But, yeah, it was interesting because, yeah, you weren't in school then. So, yeah, I mean, what was the reaction for, like, you know, like, your, like, you know, work friends or whatever. I don't know. You're old.
I was in college. With the NWO thing, I was in college. And it was really not until, like, 97. When, like, about that time, I mean, everybody was into it. I mean, it was hard to find a person that wasn't where I went to school. I mean, we go to the student union, like, every Monday and watch Nitro on the TVs there. I mean, it was just awesome. We'd have the pay-per-view parties at our apartments or something like that. I mean, especially like every Monday and like that one Sunday a month, we all got together and you know, everybody was into it. Not so much WWF. I still watch WWF, and I could see people were getting into like Stone Cold at that time, you know, because he was really getting hot like in 97. People were starting to get into him. But yeah, it was just like the NWO thing. Man, the thing just took off, and I remember riding down, going down the street, and there, somebody tagged an NWO on a stop sign. I mean,
awesome.
It was amazing. It was amazing about it.
I know. I mean, that's awesome. That's awesome. And another thing, did you ever have Nitro parties?
No. Well, we just had the thing like we would go to a student union, and just like everybody was there, like anybody that was
like
into wrestling.
How many people?
Maybe 100, 150.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Yeah.
So there were a lot of people in the wrestling then.
Yeah, a shitload of people were in
there. Oh, wow. That's awesome. That is awesome. Yeah, because we would, like, when I was in high school, we would throw Nitro parties, and we videotaped them, you know? We videotaped them, and we would try, you know, dressing up in wrestling costumes, you know?
Uh-huh. You ever send the tape into W?
Yeah, we sent the tape in. And I'm one of my friends, his name was Matt, he wore, like, a tidy whitey underwear, and he, like, dyed it and painted it and, like, drew a beard, and he was Scott Hall. Like, put fake chest hair on him and stuff. It was hilarious. And that, I believe he's the reason why we didn't win the whole, Nitro party thing. Plus, they had, like, college campuses have thousands of people there, while we, you know, we had maybe 20 guys there. So, yeah. I don't know. It was still cool, though. All right, so Nitro, it's a go-home show before the Hog Wild pay-per-view. And best thing about the Hog Wild pay-per-view is the cover of it is red and yellow Hulk Hogan.
Gosh, yeah, so, I'm looking at it right now.
Yeah. All right, so it's Harlem Heat. They beat the Rock and Roll Express, who've been hanging around WCW for a while, never winning matches. They're never winning. Medusa loses to Malaya Osaka. I believe it was because there was interference by Bull Nakano. Alex Wright beat
had to have been some kind of interference.
Yeah. Well, this is WCW. You never know.
Yeah.
They had Randy Savage against Regal. And the cool thing about this was Lex Luger and Sting, they came out like and just sat ringside, you know, waiting for the NWO to come out and attack. So they had this like they were doing their own protection, and I loved this gimmick, loved it. Where they're, you know, they were trying to protect all the other guys, and it wasn't just this match. They had them for other matches, I believe, on this night, where people would come out to do security. I thought it was really cool. And
yeah, I just remember in the promo afterwards, Savage kept saying how he's going to take Hogan out in the highway when he's going to the ring for his match with the Giant. It never happened.
Yes. It did not happen. But Randy Savage was just all kinds of crazy. And the Booty Man was on this show because I believe they put this there very strategically because he was Hogan's best friend. So he wrestled Ric Flair, and they were just kind of trying to get his face out there, I think. The Giant destroyed Pitbull Pittman.
Well, plus they had all the horsemen just destroy him after the match. So,
yes,
you know, because they saw him as, you know, being part of Hulk Hogan, so they just beat the shit out of him.
Yes, they did.
Sending a message right there.
And it got over. It got over huge. And then Sting and Luger beat the Nasty Boys in the main event.
I remember at the end of the show, there was a limo outside, and I think Sting opened the door, and then somebody, like, threw something out, and then they drove off, and it was like a WCW bag or something like that.
No, it was a condolences wreath. Like, someone's going to die. Like, the NWO is going to die, or going to kill someone in WCW. It was a wreath that said condolences.
Oh.
Yeah, so we have this huge, huge show. And normally pay-per-views are on Sundays, but Hog Wild was on a Saturday. And so they did.
This was just so Eric Bischoff could go to the Sturgis rally.
Yes, there was no live gates. There was, I mean, honestly, like, so they did a live Saturday night show first. So
they got
five hours
of wrestling.
Yeah, it's a five-hour show. Five-hour show, you know.
That's too long
just,
for me.
You know, all in front of these drunk, hot, not hot as in, like, I want to fuck them. I mean, hot as in, like, they're sweaty bikers, you know, and they're all.
This was a bad environment for a wrestling show. This was really
was,
bad.
It
I mean,
was.
It should have been in an arena. It would have been so much better in an arena.
Yes, because.
I mean, these people didn't care about these matches and shit like that. They didn't care about this show.
No, they did not. They did not care at all. Yeah, it was. I don't know. It was a really bad environment. For this show. So they do the Saturday night matches. None of them even deserve to be mentioned. There's nothing really that happens. So let's go ahead and get straight to the pay-per-view. Ultimo Dragon had showed up. Is this his first show?
Yeah, I believe this was his debut.
This is Ultimo Dragon's debut. Who Ultimo Dragon had a very similar style to Rey Mysterio's, but he was from Japan, so he also was more like stiff, and he you know, did a lot more kicks and things. But Rey Mysterio retained against Ultimo Dragon in a really good match. It was a match good enough that they actually put it on a Mysterio DVD.
Yeah.
Scott Norton wrestled Ice Train because they had broken up as a tag team now. And so
I think this was an I Quit match. Or submission match.
It was a submission match, but
that might be next month or something.
No, it was the next month. It was the next month where that is, because the referee called the match because Ice Train wouldn't give up. He wouldn't quit, so the referee stopped the match. You know, horrible.
Oh
yeah. It was bad. You would think these two big tanks, would put on something better, but they definitely did not. Medusa pinned Bull Meccano, and like they always clicked. I thought they always clicked as opponents. They had they did like the Ricky Steamboat, Ric Flair finish almost, but with the
back suplex into a bridge.
Yeah, it's a back, like she called it the backdraft in WWE.
Oh yeah,
but
that's right.
Yeah, and she lifted her shoulder up, so she's the one that won the match. So she was able to destroy Bull Nakano's motorcycle.
She did not do a good job.
No, she maybe dented the thing. I could have driven it out of there.
It was just like she kept on hitting it, and it would just bounce off. And I said, I might want to go with a different idea here. This ain't working.
Yes, she should have gotten she should have borrowed that monster truck from the Giant and maybe crushed it. Benoit and Dean Malenko had a 30-minute awesome match. Awesome match. It went to a draw.
This match to
twice.
Me was this was a good match, but again the location took me out of it just because nobody cared about it. You know?
If I would have been there live, I probably would have hated it. But, I mean, with the announcers, I mean, yeah, maybe the crowd wasn't into it all that much, but it was a really good match. It was really good.
And it was originally a 20-minute time limit draw, and they did they did a 5-minute overtime and went and did another 5-minute overtime, and Chris Benoit pinned him. So.
Yes. They like, every time that they would restart the match, the crowd booed. They booed because they didn't want to see any more of the match because they didn't care. They didn't care because they were these drunk asshole bikers. Harlem Heat actually beat the Steiners after Sherry, threw powder in Scott Steiner's face and Colonel Parker broke his cane over him. And it was like one of the, like there was a false, like almost like a false sense that the Steiners were going to win because Colonel Parker actually threw the powder in Booker T's face at first, but it was like Sherry had to clean up the mess that Colonel Parker had started.
Yeah.
Flair beat Eddie Guerrero, another match that you're kind of right, if the location was better, it would have been a better match. All right. Kevin Nash and Scott Hall wrestled Sting and Luger. And this match was Luger and Sting were about to win the match, okay? And Luger picks up Scott Hall, has him in the torch rack. And Nick Patrick was supposedly like, he got knocked out or something, and he's like supposed to be busy. So he actually ran into Lex Luger's leg, and then Scott Hall fell on top of him, and then
it kind of looked like he clipped the leg.
Yes, it looked like he did it on purpose. And they're doing this thing where it's like they're teasing that he's going heel and he's just denying it. No, of course I didn't do that, blah, blah, blah. And it's, I don't know, it's just awesome. It's just awesome.
Another thing about the location on this show. I mean, they got all these bikers out there. I don't know where they are. But, look, I mean, there's no chairs. It's like everybody's standing on it. It's like just rocks. And that's a good thing to have at a wrestling event, have the fans, easily accessible projectiles. to throw at people. I don't know, maybe
yes.
It's
just
me.
No, I agree with you. I agree with you. Luckily,
and they know
that
most of these people were probably drunk as Cooter Brown out there. I mean, I bet 75% of them were. Jesus Christ.
Yes. Hogan wrestled the Giants. The Giants was actually over with these bikers because he's a giant. You know, he's over as a babyface. And people are cheering him, and Hall and Nash try coming in. And he knocks them all out. You know, he just beats the shit out of them. And then there's the belt. It's sitting in the ring, you know. And Hogan blasts him with the belt. Giant takes a sick bump. Like, just like, he took the belt like he'd been knocked unconscious. Like, and it was so great. He pins him. Then all of a sudden, the booty man, Brutus Beefcake, comes out.
And he
out.
Was out in the ring for like 10 minutes. I mean, he was out like a mackerel, you know, just dead, just laying in the ring.
Yeah, it was. It
was
funny.
Another thing about
funny.
This match was you could tell Hulk Hogan has not played heel in a while because he did the Hulk up and the finger pointing in this match. Seriously. You're still doing the Hulk up when you're a bad guy.
It was new to him being a heel. He didn't do it. I don't think he did it after this. I'm pretty sure that was the last time. And then he tried it, didn't work. Well, the booty man, you know, when he comes out wearing the NWO shirt, he's got a cake for Hogan.
Yes, his birthday.
And yes, it's Hogan's birthday, and he thinks he's going to be with them, you know. And then they all beat the shit out of him. Just like
he said, he said, that's my best friend. If I do that to my best friend, what do you think I'm going to do to, like, then he said something, what do you think I'm going to do to Ric Flair, like, this Thursday? Because, you know, they had a Clash of the Champions coming up with Flair and Hogan headlining this next week.
Yeah, it was, yes, they're trying to set up, like, some ratings for the Clash coming up. Because the Clash was no longer a main show anymore, really.
There was no point to the Clashes anymore.
There was no point to the Clashes anymore because there's nothing.
You got 2-hour night. Just look at the hours of live TV they did this whole week. 2 hours of live Saturday night, 3-hour pay-per-view, 5 hours, 2 hours of Nitro the next night, 7 hours. Then you got to do a 2-hour Clash of the Champions a couple nights later. 9 live hours of TV. That's a lot of fucking work.
It really is. It really is. Really?
I mean, even Vince, the extent of, like, even today, Vince would just do, he'll just do, like, the pay-per-views and Raw. That's all, the only thing that's live, you know?
Yeah.
There's too much work on, like, production and stuff like that.
These guys were working their asses off because they had a goal, and they were trying to obtain that goal of being number one. And
this is a little oversaturation, though, for me. No,
oh, I 100% agree with you. 100% agree with you. They had they opened up with Barbarian the next night on Nitro, sorry people. The Barbarian, Ming, Hugh Morris, Kevin Sullivan. They wrestled Mean Mike Enos, Dirty Dick, and High Voltage. That is by far the most unique tag team I've ever heard of that foursome right there. Rough and Ready and High Voltage as a team. You know, why would they even team up? Well, apparently they did not like being part of the team because they turned on their own partners and left the ring anyways.
Yeah, I couldn't wait for that program to kick off between those two teams.
Yes. DDP had his epic rematch with the Renegade, beat him in about 5 minutes. And during this match, they announced that DDP would be part of the Clash of the Champions, which no
one
could possibly do.
Defending the ring against Eddie Guerrero.
Yes, his ring against Eddie Guerrero. The Mexican heavyweight champion. So now that Conan had lost the U.S. title, he's still the Mexican heavyweight champion, which was, did he have a belt? Did he even have a belt? I don't remember him having a belt.
I vaguely remember him having a belt, and this was starting when he was starting to turn heel, if I recall correctly.
Yes, he was.
Because I think he beat Chavo on the Saturday night before Hog Wild, and he, like, was kind of rough on him. they were noticing a change in the attitude. And eventually he would join the Dungeon of Doom, which I don't know who came up with that idea. It was like the weirdest thing, seeing him in the Dungeon of Doom.
It was very, very odd.
And then he would go to doing like the gang member clothing and stuff like that.
Yes, the gang member clothing.
And he's talking like you're watching American Me or something like that. That's how he started talking.
That's awesome. All right, Benoit. Well, then afterwards, Mean Gene asked him about, you know, hey, why has he been bending the rules? And Conan just, you know, kind of brushed it off and said that he was, in fact, supporting WCW against the NWO, which, you know, we needed to know that, of course. Benoit now has Woman always by his side, and Elizabeth, beat Big Ron Studd, who was the Yeti, right? The Yeti, as Tony Schiavone would call him, with a super.
Yeah, he was trained by Big John Studd, so that's where the name came from.
Yeah,
and this was the biggest superplex in the history of professional wrestling, if I remember.
It was awesome. It was awesome. And then Benoit said he was going to be facing the Giant at Clash of the Champions. And, boy, he had no idea what he was about to get into.
This Chris Benoit, this was the start, kind of the, pretty much the start of the thing with him, which would
include
Kevin Sullivan. And this is one of those, what if they never did this angle?
Yeah, I know.
Three people probably still alive. I think.
Yes, if they never would have done this, you know, like, you got to think about stuff like that. You know, what if they never would have done this angle with Benoit and Woman, who, you know, because, like, you know, there's some people that listen to this that, you know, I mean, everybody in the world knows that eventually Chris Benoit killed Woman, who was just now starting this storyline with him, who was his wife at the time, like, eventually became his wife, and they had a kid together, and he killed his wife, and he killed his kid, and then he killed himself. And, like, I agree with you, Contreras. Like, if that never would have happened, if they never would have done this angle, you're right. You know, there could be, well, you know, two people would.
Well, at least two people would still be alive, because Daniel probably would never have been born, so.
Yes, you know. Exactly. So,
this is like, it goes back, like the what if the, you know, if Bret Hart had never left WWF in 97, I think Owen Hart would still be alive. Because I don't think he would have been up in those rafters.
Yeah, it's.
I mean, it sucks to think about this stuff now because I mean it's terrible stuff. But you know what? What if none of this stuff happened? I mean,
the sad fact is that it did happen, and what happened happened. So that's just what it is. You know, it is what it is. Rick and Scott Steiner, they beat Harlem Heat by disqualification.
Oh, and let me say, I don't mean to interrupt you. I just want to go back to this real quick. You know,
okay.
This is where you get like favoritism in wrestling because Chris Benoit. You know, everybody loves Chris Benoit. He's like a smart mark hero and stuff like that. You think anybody ever said anything? Benoit stole this dude's wife. You think anybody ever gave him grief over it, like, you know, fans and stuff? No.
No one did.
It was just like, you know, everybody liked the Edge and Lita thing. People were like fucking blaming the whole thing on Lita. She's a fucking whore. And I said, well, what about Edge? What, he's a good worker, so it's okay. You don't like Lita, so it's like, it's all her fault. I think stuff like that's bullshit. You know?
No, I agree with you. I agree with you how certain people get passive. But, I mean, those same people were so quick to turned on Benoit after he killed his family, you know?
Oh, yeah. I mean, and because Benoit was like one of those, he was like not much ever came out that many people know, but he was like one of those locker room bullies, kind of like a JBL, I think you could say.
Yes.
But you never really heard bad things about him?
No, no.
And people would, if they heard something like that, you know, they just, oh well,
you're brushing
off. It's Chris Benoit. It's okay. He can do some nice. He can work a good match. It's okay what he does. It's stupid.
Yeah, I mean,
I don't know. Shit like that just bugs me.
No, it's insane that, you know, that there will be fans like that. There always are going to be fans like that. And I'm not going to lie. I liked Benoit. I liked Benoit a lot. And still, I mean, still to this day, like you know, it's hard for me to enjoy Chris Benoit matches. It really is. It's hard for me to enjoy because there's that, like, there's that guilt there. There's that guilt that, like, you know, you shouldn't enjoy something from someone that is you know, I guess evil or eventually became evil. You know, like, you think that, you know, at least I think that. Like, you know, there's so many, you know, excuses that people use of, like, what happened and what, you know, what the reasonings were. And, like, you know, I can't begin to make excuses for anybody. Why he did it, or, you know, what happened.
Nobody's ever going to know. I mean, it's just in the speculation.
Yeah, no one's ever going to know. Yes.
Write notes when you kill yourself, people. Tell us why you did this shit. Don't, you know. And when you do a murder-suicide, start with the suicide.
Yes. There you go. Sorry for a rant. Yeah, like, it's one of those things that just, you know, it really is always just on my mind, you know, just thinking about that stuff and just how sad it is. They had Mysterio beat Ultimo Dragon in, like, a rematch from the night before. Much shorter, though. It was a much shorter match.
Two rematches, and they did the Steiners and Harlem Heat.
Yes. Flair and Randy Savage had a match, and Hogan had come out and hit Randy Savage with a chair, but then they beat Flair too, didn't they? No, that was a Clash. That's the Clash. Never mind.
Yeah, that's right.
Yes, that's what happened. And then Sting and Luger wrestled the Outsiders because everybody runs out. Like, everybody runs out and just is trying to go back after all of them. And it's because Nick Patrick, like, is doing a storyline of maybe he's an evil ref, because it looked like Nick Patrick pulled Scott Hall out of the way. And so now he's not officially with them yet, but they all want to attack him. And they did an interview afterwards. Ric Flair said that he does not like Sting. He does not like Lex Luger, but he's willing to, and I quote, play ball with them because they're all WCW. They are all WCW, and, you know, he's willing to team up with them because they all want to go against the NWO.
Yeah.
And it was just awesome. Just awesome. So Clash of the Champions. They did a rematch. Mysterio, Dean Malenko. Rey Mysterio beats him again. Malenko won at first, but after the match, Randy Anderson noticed that Rey Mysterio's foot was on the rope after he gave him, like, one of those, like, those super gut buster things where it starts off, like, almost like, you know, he has him in, like, a fireman's carry and lifts him over his head and then lands on his knee off the top rope. It's pretty cool. But then they, you know, reversed it, and Rey Mysterio eventually won.
Yeah, I love that gut buster off the top rope. That was an awesome move.
It was awesome. It was awesome. Then they had VK Wall Street versus Jim Duggan. And this
one
is
of these
one of
matches
Saturday
does not
night.
One of these matches does not belong.
Yes. It was WCW Saturday night. They had this feud going on for a while, and it was because Jim Duggan wanted to hit him with that roll of tape that he always tries to hit people with. This the worst gimmick in wrestling at this point, and I'm including women's shoes. And he went for the swing, or he was going to go for a swing, but the referee took the tape away, and VK Wall Street rolled him up and pinned him. Whatever. It's just a short match. Was just something to fill some TV time. Conan beat the Ultimo Dragon, and he cheated to win again. And Mike Tenay did the commentary for this match and the Rey Mysterio match. Rey Mysterio. Ming was supposed to wrestle Randy Savage, but Randy Savage didn't show up because he took that chair shot from Hogan on Nitro. So they just used this as, like, interview time with Kevin Sullivan and the rest of the Dungeon Doom, just about Hogan more. They talked about And while they're doing the serious promo, they had that fucking leprechaun just like running around running around the ring. And why, I have no idea. I have no idea why this happened. Then they had that Medusa Bull Nakano rematch. Eddie Guerrero won the Battle Bowl ring, which the ring, it makes, why they even put this on the line for anything, no one even knows. So Eddie Guerrero wins this ring, and now he has it. And what does this mean? No one has any idea, but DDP attacks him afterwards.
And this
is kind of
the start of DDP's push, kind of.
Yeah,
you know.
this is the start of his heel push. So, you know, they're really putting a lot into the whole DDP thing. And even though it started off with a loss, it really did get him over as a heel. It was pretty cool.
Yeah.
It was pretty cool. The Giants against Chris Benoit. Okay.
This was awesome.
This match was awesome. It took all of 23 seconds, but Benoit is, like, taking off his vest, okay? The Giant lunges at him and hits him with a dropkick that Benoit goes flying for. He went flying for. Then he hits him with, like, the biggest-looking chokeslam ever.
Yeah.
Throws him through the ring, pins him. Benoit doesn't even have his vest off. And
I think
him
what
and
happened was woman was trying to help him take his vest off, and he was trying to do it himself, and they kind of had, like, a... It seemed kind of like a tug of war, but who's going to take the vest off or something? And
yeah,
that's where the
yeah,
Giant caught him off guard.
It was awesome, though. It was
a
really, really good match. But not good match, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And then Harlem Heat and Sting and Luger and Rick and Scott Steiner were having a triple threat match. And it ended up being like a no contest, right?
Well, the NWO interfered, and they were attacking Sting and Luger outside of the ring, and then inside the ring, Scott Steiner hit Frankensteiner on, I think, Booker T. And so Nick Patrick is there. He starts counting one, two. He's about to go down for the three, and he sees the outsiders in the aisle going at it with Sting and Luger and calls for the bell and says it's like a disqualification or something.
That little
heel thing there with the referee.
That definitely Nick Patrick. Then Flair and Hogan are the main event.
Oh, and during this match, they announced that on the following Monday Nitro, they would have VK Wall Street and Jim Duggan. And I'm glad they announced it because I might not have watched it if they had not announced this match.
Yes. It made me immediately. I actually had plans to have a foursome with three virgins that night. But I actually changed my plans to make sure that I watched Nitro that night because it was kind of a big deal to see that big VK Wall Street versus Jim Duggan rematch that everybody was really excited about. They had Flair and Hogan. It was disqualification because Nash and Hall come to the crowd. They beat up on Flair. And then Sting and Luger and Arn Anderson and Mongo McMichael, heels and faces again. All together, they cleared the ring, which was awesome.
Yeah.
It was awesome. It was really good stuff. Monday Nitro, they decided to put the main event first. They put Jim Duggan versus VK Wall Street. Jim Duggan wins, taped fist, of course. Benoit and Bobby Eaton, former tag team partners, wrestled each other. And I remember I was really excited for this match because I was always like a big Bobby Eaton fan. I always have been. I always will be. And I actually recently watched this very Nitro within the last week. And it was a short little match, but it was fun. Scott Norton beat the Disco Inferno.
He probably just destroyed him.
He did just destroy him. Dean Malenko defeated Lord Steven Regal. And to be honest, like, it was weird because they would all have good matches with other people, but I never thought Dean Malenko and Lord Steven Regal ever really clicked in matches. I don't know why. I think it's because Dean Malenko's so little.
Might be.
He's just such, you know, I don't know. It's just weird to me. The Nasty Boys wrestled the Public Enemy for about the 400th time. Chavo Guerrero beat DDP. And
that was weird.
It was very weird. And it was because they really are going for a push of DDP, but they just, for some reason, just stop.
And they had them, they were going to wrestle on the next pay-per-view, so maybe that's why they did this.
Yes, yes. Harlem Heat beat Mark Bagwell and Scotty Riggs, and then the Giants wrestled Randy Savage in no contest because the NWO ran in and attacked everybody. That's pretty much it for that match.
Which is going to be a familiar finish for like several months.
Yes, yes. What always would happen on these Nitro main events, you'll get to, because a lot of this stuff we could cover, like, we're going to cover in detail, but we don't have to get as detailed, because it's a lot of the same stuff, that we're going to be seeing. Like, the next Nitro, it was Hoovy beating Billy Kidman, and Hoovy made
real
a surprise
quick,
debut.
Here on WCW Saturday Night, they had Lord Steven Regal beat Lex Luger to win the TV title back when Harlan Nash interfered.
I do not remember that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did not remember that at all.
Do you remember, this was during this time period, because I thought this was really cool, those paid announcements by the NWO. Do you remember those?
Yes, they were very,
black
very
and white.
We should talk about those. They were very innovative at the time because they would do commercials to try selling their stuff, and also just like commercials like about themselves, just like little vignettes where they would say that they paid for the ad time. So they would say like the following announcement was paid for by the NWO.
Which was logical because, you know, how else would they get TV time? You know,
yes.
WCW really wouldn't give them, they were outsiders, they really wasn't going to give them like their own little vignettes and stuff because, you know, if they're trying to destroy you, why would you give them any vignettes? So the paying for your own stuff, that was pretty cool.
And I often wonder, because I know you are also from the South, but you know, like there's some pretty dumb Southern fans that like WCW at the time. They had, for the merchandise for like the NWO shirt, they had like two separate numbers for it. You know, it was the same thing. It went to the same place, but they had two separate numbers. And I always wonder, like, if they would call, like, you know, to order an NWO shirt and then also call the WCW line to get a WCW, like a Sting shirt or something like that. I always wondered if people would do that. Because they had the two separate numbers. And I was just a kid at the time. So, of course, you know, I loved getting that. I got the NWO shirt, like, right away. And I got a Mankind shirt right away, too. I remember when they did the Mick Foley interview, I got a Mankind shirt right away.
You wore your NWO shirt, I bet you. The very next time you had school, that was one thing you wore, huh?
What, the NWO shirt?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
very next day of school, that's probably what you wore at school, wasn't it?
No. I would wear my NWO shirt every Monday, though. I would wear it every Monday, because Monday was wrestling day, you know?
Yeah.
I would. It's just awesome. All right. Then, let's go to that Nitro. They had Juventud Guerrero debut, destroyed Kidman. Kevin Sullivan and Big Bubba beat Mark Bagwell and Jim Powers. And I thought it was so weird because Big Bubba was kind of like going to turn on the Dungeon to be with the NWO, but then he got turned down, and it's like the Dungeon just welcomed him back anyways.
Yeah.
It's strange. Very strange. Chavo getting his push against Mean Mike Enos, not penis, wonk from our chat room right now. He keeps saying that I'm saying Mike Penis, but I'm not. We have Rey Mysterio beats Mr. JL, who had not been around for, what, months, right?
Yeah, well, he had broken his arm earlier in the year. In a match Dean Malenko, I think he broke his arm. This is probably one of his first matches back on TV.
Yes.
Maybe 14 minutes is probably a decent match.
Yes. The Giant beat Jim Duggan. And they would have these matches like all the time. All the time. The Giant and Jim Duggan seemed to wrestle probably 5 or 6 times on Nitro. Once again, Flair and Anderson wrestled the Rock and Roll Express, beat them. This was Jericho's debut, wasn't it?
Yeah, this was his debut.
Yeah, Chris Jericho debuts on the show and is wrestling Alex Wright. And Jericho didn't want to win because Alex Wright hit his head on something. So he came to WCW, and he didn't come to take easy wins. And that men like himself and Alex Wright would stand up to Hulk Hogan in the NWO.
I think this is the first time I ever saw Chris Jericho.
Yes, just awful, corny shit. But yes, this was Jericho's first night in WCW, and that's what. Then the Steiners destroyed the Blue Bloods of Bobby Eaton and Dave Taylor, and then Luger,
I think
he
broke
Sting
up after
Russell,
this match.
Yes, I think so. I think they did too. And then Sting and Lex Luger beat Benoit Mongo, or no, they wrestled Benoit Mongo, but then Nebula interfered. This happens week after week after week. But the thing is, no one cares. No one even cares. I would watch this every week and know that, you knew that the main event was going to be running every week, and then it just we would still watch it. I mean, did you still watch it every single week?
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to watch every single week regardless of what happens because I'm just, I'm just one of those fans that's going to watch every week regardless of anything,
Yes.
Yeah. I have
no
standards.
I'm with you. I'm with you.
I mean, I mean, like when Brian say you got these certain people out there that they're just going to buy every pay-per-view and they're going to watch every wrestling show. That's me. I just am,
Yeah.
No matter how bad it
is,
I'm just always going to watch it, so.
Yeah, I absolutely love wrestling.
I believe, I believe before this match, I think this is where they made the, where Sting made the offer to Flair and Anderson to team with him and Luger in the War Games. And
it was announced that was going to be the team. War Games.
Yeah, and then this match with Benoit and then Michael came out because Stephen Michael sounded so stupid. He'd been in the Horseman for like 2 months, maybe not even 2 months. He says, "Okay, but we're going to take you on this match, see if you got what it takes to hang with the Horseman." I said, "Shut the fuck up. You've been here 2 months. You don't know shit."
yeah, Mongo. I like Mongo, but, I know.
He's terrible on
interviews. Yeah. Oh, just awful. Because he was, he sounded like he wasn't smart. He sounded like a dumb man. That's what it was.
Sounded like a typical dumb football player.
Yes, they had a, Nitro was in Chattanooga the next week, and Smoky Mountain Wrestling had just shut down recently. It was if it hadn't shut down, it was on its last legs. I'm pretty sure
it was shut down. In the end of 95, it shut down. So.
Yes, so this is, a year later. And they hired Mark Curtis, the referee, who was the jack-of-all-trades of Smoky Mountain, and also a trained wrestler and good friends with Mick Foley and trained with Mick Foley and Shane Douglas and those guys. So he was now a WCW referee. And then DDP beat Alex Wright. The Harlem Heat wrestled and beat the greatest tag team in the history of all time, Greg Valentine and Buddy Valentino, when Valentino was pinned with a Harlem Hangover, which that move needs some love, okay? Booker T would do this, flipping leg drop off the top rope that no one does anymore in wrestling. I just thought it was awesome. What a good move, I thought. And one thing that was noteworthy of this is Ted DiBiase was in the crowd. Ted DiBiase had left the WWF a month beforehand or a couple of months beforehand because the guy he was managing, who was Stone Cold Steve Austin, lost a Caribbean strap match to Savio Vega. So then he lost. So he left the WWF, and now he's with WCW. And on this show, he's sitting there, and he says,
he holds up four fingers, and he says, he holds up four fingers, and he says, next week five.
Five, yes. So it's four fingers, next week five. And, like, the excitement I had for this, oh, my gosh. Because then, all right, well, so let's just get through this. Jericho beat Dean Malenko, the Giant destroyed Brad Armstrong, but I was just excited to see him on TV. Macho Man's back, he destroys Big Ron Studd. The Steiners they wrestle Sting and Lex Luger via disqualification. But I always loved when they would give these matches away, the Steiners and Sting and Lex Luger. I loved it so much. And then the Horsemen as a unit beat the Dungeon of Doom in the main event. Actually, no interference, no Hogan, no outsiders. It was a pretty clean, you know, addition of Nitro.
I think Flair had the figure four on Kevin Sullivan, and woman held his hands for, like, extra leverage, and that's how he got the pin.
I think that is what happened.
And DiBiase was saying when Ted DiBiase was there, Bischoff was saying, oh, he said, next week five, he says, I'm predicting he's going to be the next member of the Four Horsemen. I said, what? He's not paying attention to what's going on in this company with those WWF guys coming in. He dumb shit.
Yes, it was just so awful. So stupid. You know, just, so dumb. All right, so we're at the Monday Nitro before War Games. And Glacier is finally debuting in WCW. The one thing that I forgot to mention on that last show, wow, I cannot believe I completely missed it, was at the end of that match that the New World Order did come out. And so finally they're like, you know, they're getting an advantage on everybody. And then all of a sudden, whoa, here comes the giant, the biggest member of the Dungeons of Doom. You know, everybody's so excited. He picks up the Barbarian and he choke slams him. The Giant is now a member of the NWO. Awesome. What do you think about that?
I don't know. I just thought it was kind of weird because he just, like, lost the title. But they did explain it, like, right afterwards when they were at the broadcast booth. I just remember they were trying to do this promo at the broadcast booth, and then the Horseman Dungeon Doom came over, and they just pulled them down, and they got in the damnedest fight near that broadcast booth. I mean, it was pretty awesome. And so then they got back up there, and they were just explaining why the Giant did it. It said it was all about money, and I just remember spitting on the WCW logo at the end of the show. It was pretty cool. I also remember during the show, there was a fight in the crowd. They had, like, a wide shot of the arena, and I can see this very large man. He's walking down the steps, and he's walking over a few seats, and all of a sudden he grabs this guy and just throttles him, and just grabs him by the throat, and then you see just this mob of people going over there, and Bobby Heenan thinking something's going on with NWA. He said, what's going on now? Who else we got coming out here? And it's just like this big brawl. They got handled pretty quickly by security in the audience.
Yeah.
I don't know how many people remember that, but it was pretty cool.
No, I thought that, like, I really, to be honest, do not remember that at all. I honestly really don't.
That's why I'm here.
That is why you were here. All right. Nitro starts off, okay, with, let's just talk about the big thing that happens, okay, on this.
Okay.
Where,
I think Lex Luger is wrestling Rick Steiner.
Yes.
And then Nick Patrick, Nick Patrick comes down and says something's going on outside with Sting. And so he goes out there. It's raining. There's this limo. All of a sudden, the camera gets close to this limo, and you hear Sting's voice and Ted DiBiase's voice. And you know, it sounds like they're making some kind of a deal. And then Luger goes up there, and DiBiase gets there. He says, "What have you done with Stinger?" And says, "I haven't done anything with him." And then all of a sudden, see a person that looks like Sting get out and attacks Luger. And you know the announcers are flipping out, and then Luger gets beat up and left out in the rain, and then they drive off DiBiase and the supposed real Sting, and then it's like just like chaos. Nobody knows what's going on. It looks like Sting just joined the NWO, even though he was in Japan, which I figured if you worked for WCW, you would know where, you know his schedule, but you know. Maybe should have just like made a phone call to Japan to see if Sting was still there. It would have cleared this thing up. And so that was the big deal on the show. And they didn't know what they were going to do for the War Games with, because it's supposed to be Sting, Luger, and Flair and Anderson against Hogan against the NWO. So that was all up in the air.
It was only supposed to be versus Hogan. Hogan, Hall, Nash, and they didn't name a partner, and the Giant wasn't their partner.
Partner. They never really made it clear that who was going to be on the NWO side in that match. We just kind of assumed it was going to be like the Giant was.
Yes, they just assumed.
And then they did this. I remember the Horseman coming up to the podium, and Arn Anderson, Arn Anderson was such a great talker. And he said, you've taken so much from WCW, and the one thing I never would have thought you'd taken from us, but you took Stinger from us. It's just like an awesome promo. Everybody's in shock. And I actually thought it was the real thing. I mean, I couldn't really tell at that point.
Yeah, I thought it was him, too.
Yeah.
I thought it was him, too. All right, so let's start at the beginning of the night, Drew. Super Colo beats Pat Tanaka. Really quick match. And then they were just doing that because they wanted a fresh challenger for Rey Mysterio. And so it was going to be Super Colo versus Rey Mysterio at the weekend Fall Brawl. The Quebecers debut in WCW. They wrestled the Nasty Boys, which at the very beginning of this match, I was so super stoked because I love the Quebecers. They're awesome. You know, I'm so excited.
Yeah, they were a great team in WWF.
They were very great in the WWF, but in WCW they were not so great. They came in out of shape, and they looked old. They were looking rough.
Carl Ouellette, he was a pretty good big guy. You know, he'd do flips and stuff like that.
Yes. He's up until a couple of years ago, even like that. I remember seeing him. He was still good. He was in TNA for a little bit. All right, so they announced that it would be the Nasty Boys against the Harlem Heat at Fall Brawl, and they also announced that it would be Randy Savage wrestling the Giant, and I was super stoked for that because I loved that. Scott Norton beat Pitbull Pittman in a submission match. And then they announced that Scott Norton was going to wrestle Ice Train in a submission match at Fall Brawl. And Juventud Guerrero wrestled Joe Gomez in a match that no one could have possibly cared about.
Why would you put Juventud Guerrero in a match with a guy like Joe Gomez? With all the other people you probably had in the back, he couldn't have thrown somebody else out of here. God.
Yes. They had, it was supposed to be Psychosis against Conan at Fall Brawl, but Psychosis got injured, so it was Juventud, like, stepping in his place. And then the whole incident with the Lex Luger thing happened. So afterwards, the announcers keep talking about, like, you know, wow, Sting turned.
Real quick, I wanted to go back to, I think maybe it was the
week before when the NWO limo was outside and they saw Ted DiBiase getting in it. And so that's how they figured he was part of the NWO. And, like, Sting picked up, like, a big cement block and threw it through the window. And then the limo takes off. And then you remember he and Luger steal a cop car?
Yes. Steal a cop car. And, you know, if you steal a cop car and you're wrestling WCW, you do not get in trouble. You know, because it's okay. Go ahead and steal your cop car. That's fine. Come
Maybe
on.
Maybe they explained it to him. Well, it was the NWO officer, you know. We had to steal your car.
And then the officer was like, oh, okay, that's fine. That's okay.
Kid Turner probably bought him off.
Yes, of course. Yeah, they... All right, well... what was... Yeah, because they had the Barbarian Ming. They beat the Public Enemy. And they were really pushing them. They were pushing the Barbarian and Ming as like a serious tag team. They wanted people to know that they were like, you know, big, you know, heavy-handed ass kickers. So then we had John Tenta wrestle Randy Savage, and they told Randy Savage, hey, the NWO is there. So Randy Savage just took off. He went after him because his gimmick is that he hated them. He hated the NWO. So he just wanted to kill them at all times. He wrestled because he had to, but his, you know, what was important to him was killing WCW. And it all ended up with Randy Savage, you know, ran to the limo again, didn't he?
I'm not sure. I'm trying to... I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know what happens.
To be honest, I do not remember that. And then...
I remember earlier that, like, during the Faces of Fear match, Bobby Heenan called Ming Haku, and Eric Bischoff had to clarify that Ming was not associated with any other wrestling organization, I guess. I don't know what that means. Was this a theory where Heenan was always... Somebody put in the thread about Heenan always drinking on the air. I could never tell.
Yes, to be honest, I could never tell either.
I mean, it was so over the top and so goofy and funny. I mean, I don't know. Maybe other people could tell. I couldn't really tell.
And maybe that's why he laughed so much, because the announce team for the pay-per-views, in my opinion, and people could disagree all they want, was the best announced team of all time. People say JR and the King are the best ever, but I personally think Tony Schiavone, Dusty Rhodes, and Bobby Heenan were the best three ever to announce a match, because they sat there and had fun the whole time. And I mean, like, there's
like
times where I watched those.
It was like just like what it's just like casual. You're just watching a show with three guys.
Yes,
you're watching it with them.
So funny. Yes,
like,
they
have
made you laugh so often. I laughed more times with those guys than ever.
They should have
them
on Mystery Science Theater 3000. That's, you know, like
they
three
really
guys
should.
in the corner of the screen watching a shitty movie.
I mean, seriously, where else can you get the...
I tell you, there's a lady in the man's bathroom. Look at that. There is a woman in the man's gun right here in Baltimore.
I mean, I could listen to that 100 times and laugh every single time. Just because... I mean, it's hilarious. It's funny. Dusty Rhodes gets so crazy excited about, you know, a woman being in the men's bathroom when there's like a serious brawl going on, you know? Whatever.
Yeah.
Whatever. All right. And the last show we're going to cover tonight is going to be Fall Brawl. Fall Brawl was built up really well. It was in Winston-Salem, which is the Winston-Salem and like all the Carolinas, South and North Carolina, of course, were considered horseman country. They always called it horseman country because that's where the Jim Crockett, territory was. And So Ric Flair, Arn Anderson, all those guys, that's their hometowns, essentially. I know they're from Minnesota, but they all like, you know, became famous there in this area. They were famous there.
North Carolina, so, South Carolina, places like that, Virginia.
Yes, yes. They had DDP.
They were so popular,
Chopper
they proceeded
Burrow.
to kill them every time they went to any of these towns.
Yes, they had to. They had to. Just like every time Jim Ross goes to Oklahoma, they make fun of him.
Or anybody goes to their hometown on Raw, and they have to lose.
CM Punk.
Yes. I don't know. That's what I don't want to get into a rant about that. Let's continue.
Yeah, let's continue. All right, DDP beat Chavo, and, you know.
I was impressed with Chavo at this time. He was a pretty decent worker, you know. He was
for being new.
Pretty young, yeah.
He was young as hell. He looked young. He looked like a teenager.
He was so much better in WCW than he was in WWF.
Yes.
I think. I mean, when we get to the part with the stick horse, that's when it just gets great.
Yes, he did get great there. I agree with you. All right, Ice Train beat Scott Norton in a submission match with the full Nelson. And it was announced
I dispute that. I don't think he could even get the full Nelson on Scott Norton.
No, I know, but he did in this match. They announced that the NWO said that if they won War Games, that WCW had to pay all their bills. What that even means, I have no idea.
And they would also get their own time, like on a like WCW Saturday Night. You remember that when they were doing the empty arena matches?
Yes, they would.
Those were fun.
And it was just
like you could hear everything that was going on. I mean, it's kind of hard to call spots when there's no people in the arena.
And they had a masked referee that was so clearly Nick Patrick, but they were still claiming that it wasn't him, you know?
Yeah.
That's just so funny. All right, so then Conan, who's now in the Dungeon of Doom, dressed as like a gangsta, kind of, beats Juventud Guerrera with a power bomb, and Mike Tenay does commentary for this match. And Mike Tenay would, as everybody knows, would do any Japanese or Mexican wrestling. Mike Tenay would always come out because, you know, those other guys couldn't really, they didn't know the moves, you know.
Mike Tenay was so awesome.
Mike Tenay was
so awesome back then. I mean, he's so informative. It's like you watch him today and he's like a Muppet.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
He's
like a parody.
Yeah, he's the best.
Yeah.
Yes.
He was so awesome.
Benoit beat Jericho in a hell of a match. It was like this match, how we said the matches in Road Wild were bad because of the bad crowd. The crowd here in Winston-Salem was awesome. Awesome crowd, awesome match. They reacted very well to this match. It was like a very good throwback match. It was awesome. It was
got a
real
good. Quick news update.
Okay.
It's like Fox Channel 5 in New York City, the New York Times and the AP are all calling the win for Blumenthal.
Oh, so Linda McMahon lost. Which everybody knew that was going to happen anyways.
Yeah, and that commercial last night did not help, probably.
I thought it was funny personally. But.
I thought it was hilarious. But, you know, I don't think doing that on the eve of your election is the smartest thing. I don't know.
No, probably not. All right. Mysterio beats Super Colo. I was actually very impressed with this match. Also, really good. Also
I think
really, what, you know,
what helped these cruiserweights here is they had two rings, and I think they did a bunch of flips, like from one ring to the other and stuff like that. If I remember correctly.
Yes. They had a rematch from years before, Harlem Heat versus the Nasty Boys. The Nasty Boys, it always made me mad that they eventually left because they were so awesome. I loved the Nasties. They were just so much fun. Randy Savage got beat by the Giants. They had Hogan come out, and, you know, he attacked Randy Savage, so that's why the Giant won. But somehow Randy Savage is going to be getting a title shot at the next pay-per-view, even though
this made no sense. I mean, I'm not saying Savage should have beat the Giant, which he shouldn't have, since Giant just turned heel and nobody in the NWO should have been, you know, losing at this time. But, you know, just do a disqualification or something. But I don't know. And this is when they first started doing the thing with Elizabeth, I believe, when she came out with to help Randy. Didn't they, like, paint a stripe down his back, like a yellow streak?
Yeah, they painted a yellow streak down him. And Elizabeth, even though she was no longer with him, was trying to help him. You know, she was trying to, you know, even though she was no longer, like, you know, it, like, she felt bad that he was getting attacked. And it was awesome. It was, like, it was very compelling stuff. I mean, it sounds goofy, but it really was. It was a very good storyline.
We should also talk about, there was a promo during the show with Flair and Arn and Luger. And talking about what they were going to do, and that they didn't know what they were going to do. They were just going to go out there for the match. And then the real Sting shows up and says, it wasn't me, Lex. It wasn't me on Sunday. And he says, I was in Japan. And he says, Luger says, Stinger, I know it was you. I don't believe you, and I don't trust you. And Sting says,
well, he goes, I looked you in the eyes. I looked you in the eyes. Yes, and
this is another one. I know you got to have, like, this is like, sometimes in wrestling you got to have a little silliness just to have an angle work, you know. I mean,
yes,
it's silly that, you know, he was in Japan. I'm sure people can vouch for him, unless, you know, maybe they can make up a story where they can't talk Japanese, so they can't vouch for Sting or something, that he was actually in Japan. I don't know, but it's like the old thing, you know, like, somebody hits somebody with a garbage can, and then the person, somebody else comes in and takes the garbage can away, and the guy gets up and he sees so-and-so with the garbage can, so he attacks him. And even when they show him the footage, they still think it was the guy that was the second guy holding a garbage can to beat him up. It's just funny things.
Here's how I could defend this, of maybe how it would work out, okay? Say Sting is in Japan, okay? And he arrives from Japan in Winston-Salem, gets to the arena, realizes, hey, that wasn't me. He says that to them. Hey, guys, it wasn't me. I was in Japan. You know, it wasn't me. He doesn't know. You know what I mean? So they're like, well, sorry, I don't believe you. So then he comes out, you know, when he comes out, and then they know. So therefore, he proves right there. So then they could have verified. They had no time to verify. I'm playing the devil's advocate right here. Right? You know, that's possible. That could have happened.
Sure.
What if Sting had just, if they're doing that interview, what if Sting would have just gotten to the building right then? Right? I mean, seriously, work with me here.
Okay.
All right. Okay, so they had the War Games match. It was Hogan, Paul, and Nash.
Real quick, let me say something about that. Ted DiBiase, real quick. It was so brilliant to have him, like, as one of the guys behind it. Because anytime anybody sees Ted DiBiase, they don't even have to use the gimmick. They can just say, you know, that's a $1 million man. You don't even have to, like, call him something different to explain it. Everybody knows Ted DiBiase is a wealthy man. So that pretty much explains itself.
They said he was the money man, so that's how they could afford it.
He's Billionaire Ted. That's the Billionaire Ted they were talking about.
Yes, and it was brilliant. It was a brilliant angle to make this
some
work.
Guys,
I mean,
they got to give goofy fucking names to kind of, especially today, like when somebody leaves and goes TNA or something, they'll give them some kind of goofy name that's a takeoff of their name from WWF.
Yes. Just awful, awful names.
Yeah.
What is it, Jethro Holiday? This horrible name.
Balls Cajone?
Yeah. No. His name wasn't Balls. Was it like Nuts? It's
B. Cajone, maybe.
Yeah.
Cajone?
Yeah.
I can't remember. It doesn't.
I don't remember.
I think it was just Cajone's.
Yeah, maybe it was. Maybe it was.
It was
Cajone's.
Yeah.
That's what his name was. Cajone's. Awesome name. All right, so Everybody's in there, and then Sting comes out. It's a fake Sting, but they don't know that it's a fake Sting.
Let's say real quick, this is different from other War Games because they did not have all teams at ringside. You know, they came out one by one from the dressing room, which you can understand because they couldn't have everybody there. You know, they couldn't have like the fake Sting just sitting there for you know God knows how long. You know, just waiting to get his chance in the ring or something like that. And so they had him coming out like in 2-minute intervals from the dressing room. So that's pretty cool.
It was different. It was definitely different. All right, so Sting comes out, a fake Sting, and they think it's a real Sting. But I immediately knew that it wasn't the real Sting.
Because it
didn't look anything like him.
Body-wise, and I mean, I've been watching Sting since 1986. I mean, I can just tell by the way that guy moves if it's him or not.
Yeah.
And I think this was Cobra.
It was Cobra as the fake Sting.
Yeah.
And so Sting is, you know, he is the fake Sting that comes down, they attack. And then all of a sudden the real Sting comes out. And they're like, well, that's the real Sting. Tony Schiavone's all, you know, jizzing his pants because he's excited that real Sting comes out. He destroys everybody. He takes out Hogan. He takes out the fake Sting. He takes out Nash. He takes out Hall. And then he's like, you know, does that prove anything to you, Lex? Huh?
You can stick it. And then I think he gives him the finger or something like that.
No. He does the, like, you know, you put one arm across and then the other arm up,
yeah.
Like, you know, kind of like a...
Oh, yeah, they couldn't do that stuff in WCW.
Yes. And so then...
And you can't blame the fucker for walking out on these assholes.
No,
you know?
Yeah, they didn't believe him. So then fake Sting puts Luger in the Scorpion Deathlock. But that is not enough, not while Hogan's in there. So Hogan puts, like, the shittiest-looking front face lock on Luger at the same time and, like, grimaces, like, yeah. So then finally Luger quits. And the show ends with, or not the, yeah, the show ends with, Luger's like crawling after Sting.
He's crawling
just
down
crawling.
The entrance way.
Yes, like Sting. And then, this is when Luger comes out, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or not Luger, this is when Randy Savage comes back. And this is when Elizabeth did that.
Oh, is it?
It ended this show. Yes. It ended this show with that Elizabeth thing. So that's how it ends. That's how it ends.
Yeah, that was really good to pay for you.
Yes, it was a very, very good show. This was when
they were having that great formula of, you know, all the hot cruiserweight matches on the undercard, and they had the storylines in the main events. Because, you know, the work in the main events wasn't the greatest, but storylines were like, really top-notch storylines at the time.
No, they really were.
They had that perfect mix of, you know, good wrestling and great storylines, which you don't get much of anymore.
You don't get much at all anymore. But, you know. All right, so next week's show, we're going to talk about Sean Waltman debuting for WCW. We're going to get past Halloween Havoc and the hilarious wig that Hulk Hogan wears.
If we try, we maybe could get through the rest of the year next week.
Yeah, we're going to try getting through the rest of the year next week. Even if we have to go over a little bit, we're going to try finishing off the year if we can.
Yeah.
We're going to do our best. It's going to be hard because there's a whole Bischoff Piper thing.
Yeah.
There's a lot going on. I highly doubt, actually, that we're going to get through the rest of the year. But we might. We really might. We'll hit it hard next week. We will hit it hard. So thanks, everybody, for listening. Thanks for calling in, the guy that did call in. We really appreciate that. Do not forget.
Give the address out.
Yes, of course. I'm going to do that right now. Do not forget, superfriendsuniverse.com is the place to listen to this show. and a bunch of other great shows. I mean, just, you know, quite a bit of other shows on that website. So check it out ASAP because it's awesome. And don't forget to listen to us next week because we will be back again, another two-hour edition of Pro Wrestling Flashback while we talk about Hulk Hogan's wig. Anything else, Couture?
No, that's it.
All right, all right. Thanks, everybody, for listening, and good night.